So how are you doing? How's your day?
The day is good. I just got back from the road. I was in I forget the past. I always focus on the future. Next, it's Toronto.
Damn it.
I was just in Columbus, Ohio
Oh, okay.
for the Columbus Comedy Festival. It was very fun. Very fun time.
Given the political climate, or we can just call it the unpleasantness that's happening right now, what is it like traveling as a comedian right now?
Good
Both
question.
internationally and,
Yeah, good question. I can't really answer that publicly yet. So I'll let you know when I get back from the next trip.
Okay, great.
So we've actually reached places where cute little questions that shouldn't be a problem can't be answered because of what's happening right now.
Yeah, it's fine. I'll just say there'll just be a skip and it'll say construction or something. Okay, I'll just try asking you stuff and you can, confirm or deny as is your want. But I was gonna say, do you feel like you've got a unique political perspective on right now because of like you did all that touring as Bernie with Anthony Antomiak? Do
Yeah,
you
Anthony
get
Antomiak,
any
yeah.
interesting political insight of the country that you might not have when you were doing that? Or is that another thing that
Have I gotten new insight, you mean, or interesting? Well, I don't think I have a unique perspective unless you could say everyone has a unique perspective. That's true. I have ideas that I'm interested in, and then there's like glaringly obvious things that are happening, and sometimes there's a loudspeaker above the prison camp of society saying, "This is not happening," and you're like, "Well, no, I saw it happen." My feeling is, if they wanted truth tellers to not exist, they need to go back in and remove all the heroes from children's stories. And they need to go back and change the ending of Wizard of Oz, and I'm suggesting this so that they overplay their hand. Change the Wizard of Oz ending so that pay no attention to the man behind the curtain is the end of the movie, and that kind of thing. That kind of thing. If they really want people to shut up, they should remove heroes from the books we were raised on, the movies we were raised on.
Well, okay. I like you talk a lot about gay villains. Like I love low
That's an
hanging
old
fruit. Is
one.
it
You've
great?
been you, you you've been on board for a long time.
Yes. Yeah. Well, I'm reading a book about the Erasure of like gay monsters from mythology and that kind of
Nice.
a thing. Does that feel like the same spot of like the way that we Erasure things out? Like, don't look behind the curtain or,
You saying that gay villains were erased from mythological stories?
a lot of them, yeah. Or the monsters were non-binary monsters and things, but
That's interesting. As a side note, I wrote a cartoon pilot that no one will make until I'm passed away. It was a retelling of the Epic of Gilgamesh. I wrote it with my friend John Roy, a stand-up comic.
Oh, great.
And I read the, a recent translation of Gilgamesh, which I had, tangentially been acquainted with earlier. And what was interesting about it is it's a very, very bisexual ancient artifact.
Incredibly.
It's one of, if not the oldest surviving written work, besides like receipts and stuff. That's the oldest written work. But Gilgamesh is like the oldest, arguably the oldest surviving written story, and it's very, very bisexual. He has a male lover that is sent to tame him, but then they fall in love with each other, and they go off on all these adventures, and they do some homoerotic things. But then, when they're about to do something really homoerotic, the it'll be like, Enkidu and Gilgamesh arrived back at their camp, and they looked in each other's eyes with the love of a thousand years. Boom! That happens to be magically where the tablet goes missing. Somebody came along and knocked it off. Because there's so many homophobes over the thousands of years, it could be any one of them that goes, well, we won't tell that part of the story.
Yeah, exactly. Well, it seems to be a pattern of like we're gonna get away queerness, but also, any civilization that has gratitude and reverence for nature, like those kind of go hand in hand. Like,
So
let's get
just
rid of
leave the
that.
warriors. So what do you know? The warriors come along and they either destroy everything or they just leave the parts about the warriors,
Yeah,
not
exactly.
learning their lessons.
Because even during the suffragette movement, a big thing that happened was they got rid of feminist fairy tales. There's a whole thing of that too. It's just
I'm sure. Oh, yes, they did. Yes, they did. Wow, this is very interesting. I see. There's an academic element to this where I get to learn from you. Thank you, Andrew.
Well, no, thank you. I was gonna say, like, you've talked about gay villains so much, and now you're playing Bane. And it's not a gay villain, but an over-the-top camp villain for sure.
Yeah,
And you're
no,
doing an amazing job of it.
and I've got to. I have a lot of fun with it. Not all the villains are gay. That's my old bit from the old days of stand up. Starscream, Ursula the Sea Witch, every portrayal of the Sheriff of Nottingham.
Oh, yeah. Vincent Price, no one's
Yes, yes,
talking.
yes,
Yeah.
yes, yes. And it was a lot of fun, and I have fun with Bane too. I kind of have taken liberty with it sometimes when I'm riffing in the room, and some of it has gotten into the cartoon where he's hinted that he's done things.
Yeah.
So I'm playing the Hollywood studio retcon game, but I'm just doing it for fun on my own in the booth recording.
Well, that seemed, I mean, your last special is called The Path of Most Resistance.
That's right. It came out
And
last year.
I think you've always made fun of your career, but then also at the same time, like you're very outspoken about things too. Like you do seem to take like the more interesting but not political path, but I just mean like for example, and you're one of the reasons I first learned about what's happening in Yemen, or
Wow, this is back in the days of when Twitter worked.
yeah, exactly. Or
It's funny you mentioned that. I can immediately date it to, oh, that was back in the. It's like a scientist looking at some rock strata, and you're like, ah, oh, yes, this dates back to the Twitter eon.
Or I remember you like bringing up some salient points about SNL at the same time. Like, do you feel like that kind of stuff has hurt your career? Like,
Maybe people like to work with me though. I
yeah.
make fun of my career because it's funnier than bragging. I have to be the biggest target to get away with all the other bullshit that I talk about everything else. I'm grateful, and speaking truly and not on a comedy stage, I'm very grateful for my career and people like working with me and stuff. There's people who choose not to work with me, maybe because of something I say or whatever, but I like to weed those people out.
Oh, that's 100%. I mean, there's a huge shakeup at SNL like this last week. Do you have any thoughts on that at all?
No, I don't. I think the country and the world and human history would be better if more than one sketch show were legally allowed in the United
Yeah.
States. At a time when sketch comedy is at its most robust in history, there should not just be one television show reflecting it. It's always been surprising to me that multiple networks don't have their own showcase sketch comedy shows. We're just like luck. It's like, what if baseball only had the New York Yankees? What? So that's the only baseball team? It's shocking to me that for many reasons, for incubating their own young talents. Why isn't Nickelodeon doing it?
Yeah.
Why isn't They're doing it over NBC Universal. Why aren't they doing it at Disney? You know, why aren't they doing it at Time Warner? There should be, and many other places, to say nothing of the bumbling blessed Netflix. Why haven't they? There's so many networks that should have a sketch show. I've said this before. Imagine this in a John Lennon voice. Imagine more than one sketch show. It feels because it feels that revolutionary. Because it's almost like there's a secret law that says that there will be no competition.
Well, and now Saturday Night Live is starting to like franchise itself in other countries, which feels
Right. We get to that
kind of
point
weird.
before we get to any competition for them.
No, it is very weird.
The last time somebody tried to compete with them, what, 30 years ago, Mad TV, they mopped the floor with them. Why didn't anybody come along and do that? It's one of the most amusing things I've had to sit through in my adult life.
This is another thing. Like I've seen you a lot of times, and like I love everything you do, but when you're on a variety show, like in my mind, like did you start in sketch?
Yes.
Because like I would love to see you do a special of that. Because like do you have favorites that you like to do with other people? Like I know Freddie and Eddie Pepitone is a great one,
Yeah.
or like I've watched you interview Andy Kindler as Marc Maron.
Wow. Andy Keller. Are you sure it wasn't Marc Maron interviewing Louis C.K. and I was doing both of those roles, or maybe it was.
It
Was
was an old comedy bar show. It was like one of the first JFL 42s in
Oh, so it was
Toronto.
oh, so
You were
it was
on
on Kindler's
Kindler's
show.
show. And actually, now you bring it, I think Todd Glass was there too.
That was a great show. You were there. That was 12 years ago. Yeah, that was a fun time. I remember that.
But
It
do you
was the
have
three of
favorite
us.
bits that you like have been sitting on for years that you would love to do, or do you have
Yes,
favorites playing off people?
I have lots and lots of notebooks of things that I'd love to do that don't get done, and a small fraction of it gets done. And I've got many, many, many lists of, in addition to movies and cartoons and TV shows that I would do if given a budget, I've got my, oh, I should do, I should do, I should do, I should do of like characters and impressions and stuff and stand-up bits and so forth. And there is a rotation of characters and stand-up bits. By the way, do you hear the noise, the leaf blower out there, or no?
Oh, yeah, that could be the construction
No,
stuff,
do you
but
hear mine?
oh no.
Good.
Oh,
Okay.
great.
So
We're both doing great on that front.
we both suppressed it. If I have to close a window, I can. It's just hot here right now.
Oh, that's okay.
I started out in sketch comedy and doing characters. That was how I got into it. And I used to be the guy at a stand-up show doing a character, like a stand-up lineup with me as George W. Bush or Vincent Price or whatever. And then I got tired of putting on difficult costumes and makeup in a bar bathroom with stickers on the mirror. So that's one of the re that's one of several reasons I was like, let's get into stand-up and or get back into stand-up, because I had done it before that. But I started doing stand-up and it just worked out of nowhere, and it just that took off, and that became mostly what I do, performing as myself and only doing characters, like dipping into character while I'm on stage as myself, the stand-up format. But I still have characters that I have, and I have the costumes, and I try to have easy costumes and easy makeup now. And I have them, A, if local at a local show, and it's a crazy wacky show around LA that's like 10 p.m., 11 p.m., or midnight. I'm like, maybe it feels like it's not necessarily a stand-up show, depending on the venue. And so I have the characters as a secondary thing for me to go to. Or if I've been hitting it and doing stand-up, 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 and I have a show, but I want to do something else. And I'm like, okay, let me take a break from myself and play Slavoj Zizek,
Jack.
or Orson Welles, or Elon Musk, Those are the three main ones right now these days. But I just did an Orson Welles show in Columbus, Ohio. And so I love doing stand up and I also love doing characters, but stand up is what kind of that's where the money is. That's where the you can't tour as a sketch show. It costs way more money to have other actors on the road with you and stuff like that. Traveling solo as a stand-up artist makes sense. If you're traveling as a duo, you can get away with it. If you're traveling as a sketch show, you better already be famous and selling out huge venues to pay for it. And I'm not. That's been legally prohibited for me. So I always have characters, and I particularly tend to bring them out to festivals rather than if I'm just going to perform at a comedy club. It's a festival where there's going to be multiple kinds of shows. I'm more likely to bring the characters and stuff.
Right. I saw you do Orson Welles at South by Southwest and another thing on AI. What is it about Orson Welles that you're just like, this is the character to comment on this thing at this time?
Good question. Why would you bring him back 40 years after he's gone? Orson Welles was a genius who, up until the end of his life in the mid 1980s, was talking about current events and up on everything. And his adult prime time decade was the 1940s. And he was with it the whole time into the 80s, talking about cutting edge news. He was, I recommend the book My Lunches with Orson. It's hilarious. He's talking shit about Ronald Reagan and Joan Rivers, because it's like the current stuff happening at that time. And I'm a big fan, and I've noticed that he has not di gone away, that younger people and younger generations still know who he is and still admire him the way I did. The weird ones. So even people that I'm decades older than still know the reference to Orson Welles. And I never stopped. I just always have kind of done Orson Welles because it's a fun voice to
It's
dip
a
in.
great voice.
But now, no, here we are at the alternative show in the Just for Laughs Festival. If it's just for laughs, then how come there aren't any? And I mean, I love his every era of Orson Welles, but I love the roast persona of Orson Welles from the Dean Martin roast. But I think that he's exactly who I want talking about AI because he's like a deity, like an authority figure on it, on entertainment, on movies.
Right, like I don't know if you've ever seen F is for Fake. That's one of
Yes, I
my
have. It's
the
one of my
favorite.
favorite movies.
But it's all about like how many directors are going to teach you that like film is actually propaganda, but in a fun way.
Yes, yes. I enjoy the teachers that are charismatic and open showmen slash manipulators that reveal that to you. Orson Welles does that in F for Fake. And I would also point out, and I love doing an impression of him sometimes in my stand-up or in a costume and character, Alan Watts.
I wrote down a question for you about the Alan Watts
Alan
impression,
Watts.
so.
Also, I love him because he admits that he's not to be trusted, that he's a showman. But that's a device to make you trust him more. I love Alan Watts, just like I love Orson Welles. What was your Alan Watts question? I'm curious.
Well, it's actually funny. This week I have to interview a Buddhist monk, so I was going to ask you, like, what's the key to a good Alan Watts impression, because he's my favorite one to listen to because he genuinely sounds like what I want a cartoon wizard to sound like.
A cartoon wizard. That's a very good way to put it. The thing about you may know the voice of Alan Watts if you're watching any sort of meditation video channel on YouTube and your 12-hour binaural beats runs out and it skips to the next video and it's something with pigeons or seagulls flying. And then they start flying through space, and someone has ported over the audio of an Alan Watts recording from the 1970s as if it's his YouTube channel. And it's just a way of pointing out how the timelessness of entertainment. When you are pretending to be true, when you are putting on a show, it might be repurposed in a way. So it's all right if you're already deceased. Somebody might bring you back and jam you into a YouTube video.
Yeah, I do find it interesting that with the dawn of AI, one of the first people to really like get AI'd the hell out of was Alan Watts.
I can tell, and this is the borderline for me. I like him being edited in with his actual words into a video. I do not like when someone makes up a new Alan Watts tracks. I can hear it. You can hear it because it doesn't have the magic.
It doesn't have the right rhythm.
It
He's
doesn't have the rhythm or the
too
magic. And
here. Yeah.
the AI craze has happened because dorks going through tech majors in colleges were corralled to keep them away from the talented people in the theater department. And they had no, what they should have been doing is finding technology to make people's real human ideas come true, not put an entire industry, multiple industries out of business. That's not a good use of technology. Oh, let's put out of business graphic designers and
Copywriters.
comedy writers and musicians and anyone who drives a car. And not with anything better, our replacement will be worse, inarguably. From
Yeah.
a heaven's point of view, not as good as the human version, but there's no way to stop us because we have bad taste in what should be. No one, this is in my craw recently. No one, the Terminator movies left out the first step of the Terminator takeover. We need to go back and put it into the movies where it's like, I am here to take all of your jobs and destroy all of your industries first. Like
Yeah.
that we didn't know that would be the first step. We
Right.
went straight to nuclear war. No, there's 20 years of them making sure no one has a job. That's the real Skynet.
Yeah. 100%. Oh, now I just want to get on a whole socialist track. I'm gonna reel it in. Okay, so we're talking about like great animation voices to do. Because there's some impression voices that are still around in cartoons that younger generations can't possibly know about. Like when they hear an old-timey prospector, it's John Huston in Treasure of the Sierra Madres. But what
Yes.
5-year-old kid? But we all
Yes.
still,
Or you come from California, I hear.
yeah.
Or whatever he says, yeah.
What do you think makes a voice that just lasts even beyond the person?
It's a good question. It has to ring true like an instrument, but be, like it not necessarily in tune, but it has to have an interesting resonance, and also a point of view that people remember, even if they forget the person.
Right.
Remember, every saying and every, there's like sayings in every language, and sometimes you can fall down a Wikipedia hole and be like, Swedish sayings. And then it'll have like 1,000 years of Swedish like folk sayings or whatever, and it's for any society or language. You got to remember, very, very often somebody said it or wrote it, and we forgot who that was, but we remembered what was said or written. It's one of the things that can, there's two ways it can happen. You could be like a famous Greek philosopher, where they're like, all of his work has been lost, presumably at the Library of Alexandria, but we know that he was famous. Or maybe the name doesn't come down, but exact what we but what you said did come down, and they're like,
Right.
no one knows who said this, but it was attributed to someone 100 years before Socrates or whatever. I don't know which one is better. Maybe the thing that was funny or interesting rem being remembered is more important than the guy's name. But now we're truly thinking in thousands of years.
Well, this is inside baseball, but I used to do a bit as like basically Larry David is a Buddhist monk that would just be like resentful of like visiting a university dorm or something. Like, oh, great poster. It's the journey, not the destination. Who came up with that? Like, You just have to swallow it.
Yeah, it's funny to imagine what great pompous self-admiring genius or self-declared genius came up with some saying like oh, a bird in hand is better than two in the bush.
Right.
Don't count your chickens before they
They
hatch
hatch.
was like an ancient Anglo-Saxon wise man who's no longer remembered.
100%. There is something about wisdom that has to be passed down in a parable because otherwise it's too big to understand, and so it seems stupid, but
It there's that's a I get it.
yeah.
It's a human trick. It's a way to remember something. The other another way that comes to mind is to attribute a false quote to a famous person, like the Voltaire gets a lot of these.
Yeah.
I disagree with what you say, but I defend to the death your right to say it. He didn't say that, and also none of the libertarians who've ever repeated it have ever believed it.
Yes,
There's
a
no
100%.
such thing. There's no such thing as someone who would defend to the death your right to
To
say it.
say it.
It's they've all claimed they believe that, but not one of them actually does.
No, there's another one too of Voltaire's. It's like, life is a shipwreck, but one must remember to sing in the lifeboats. And I'm like, that was probably actually like a wine pillow cushion, one
Yeah.
o'clock.
It sounds like somebody who said that jokingly, gallows humor on this on the Titanic, and then didn't make it off, and then someone else just put it out there, and it became a
Yeah.
saying.
Do you have any favorite old cartoon voices that are still in your repertoire that you used to go to as a kid?
You know what? Am I stand-up act?
No, just even if you're goofing around in a booth or it's just one you enjoy, like you're just like, oh, Snagglepuss is always fun, or
I mean, sure.
Rocky and Bullwinkle.
It depends on what the context is. It depends on what comes up, what I'm looking at. The general voice that's fun for to warm up your own voice when you hear yourself, every microphone and headphones are slightly different. People in the business in also in film preservation know this. Basically, every recording of a song is slightly different.
Yeah.
There is no definitive version of Stairway to Heaven. Every record copy has aged in slightly a different way, and the CDs age in slightly different ways and clip and degrade and so forth. And speakers also transmit sound in slightly different ways and headphones. So nothing is the same. Every time you watch a movie or listen to a song, it's different. That's a side note. But like, you know, if you test a microphone, you're hearing your voice. You're hearing it on the microphone and in your headphones, or, you know, I'm using the computer microphone now, but you're hearing your voice in a new way slightly. And microphones and headphones are very different. So I love to do warm-ups, you know, blah, 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 blah. But also, one of the most fun vocal warm-ups to do is Orson Welles, because then you're like, you know, like, we know a little place where Mrs. Buckley lives every July. Peas grow there. Now you really don't mean that, do you? Because it starts, he really, if you're familiar with frozen peas, he starts right
Yes.
down there on resonating with the microphone. And then he pulls back. That's not what you want, is it? He's got like both sides of microphone talk
Yeah.
in one short bit. So I love that. I mean, other than that, it depends on what inspires me. I mean, sure, if something comes up and it reminds me of Goofy, I'm gonna be doing Goofy, you know?
Well, there was a study out of Britain recently, because I don't know why neuroscience just love to try and figure out humor and comedy, but supposedly they're saying now that sense of humor is not genetic at all. It has way more to do with your first group of friends and making community. But I'm also interested in it because you're a wonderful mimic, and I'd be interested if you think that's hereditary. Like, does any of your family also just, when they're telling a story, they go into character beats, not like
Yes.
Orson Welles, but.
Yes, they do. My whole family does it, and there's different kinds of humor on both sides of the family, and me and my brothers have similar talents with voices and stories.
Oh, really?
Yes. So, whatever penciled neck academics came down with that theory need to take it back to the chopping books. I don't know. I think Speaking generally of a sense of humor, yes, I believe it's probably devised with your friends in school because if you know this, the accent that you speak with is not from your parents. It's from your friends when you are in puberty, basically. It's from your high school friends or junior high school friends. Well, I grew up in Atlanta, Georgia, but we moved to Los Angeles, California, right before I turned 10 years old. And so, I went through puberty in California. So when I moved to California, I had like a little Georgia accent, and it just like went away because that's my you get like you get baby teeth, you get real teeth, then you lose your baby voice, you get your adult voice, and it's gonna sound generally like whoever you grew up with in your teenage years. Now, that can change over time. If you're like, I've lived in Paris for 30 years, yeah, you're gonna sound a little more French or whatever. It can change over time. But way more than the parents' influence is your social network. And I bet I wouldn't be surprised if humor is the same way. But there are but then you're gonna have to do a different besides just your sense of humor, there's a like the there's things about your mannerisms, vocal mannerisms and physical mannerisms that are arguably brought down from your recent ancestors. The question is it genetic or is it learned from like being with them all the time growing up as a kid? Probably both.
No, I have friends who had immigrant parents, so they learned to like read in an accent. And now I find that if those friends get drunk, suddenly they have an accent again.
That's funny.
I don't, what else?
When I get
Going on
drunk, I come
so
up with
about
a whole
this.
bunch of accents, that's for sure.
So how much, because you're such a good mimic, that I almost feel like you get less credit as a writer. How much like research goes into an impression? And have you like picked up any hobbies or interests because of deep dives? Like, I don't know if you have like a favorite conspiracy theory because you've been doing Jesse Ventura for a long
Yep, let me
time.
tell you that, McMahon. Why I wouldn't call it a con why do you say conspiracy theory? Look around. The conspiracy is the fact. I love him because he's the only one of those guys that's good. And he's right. He focused on the conspiracies that were true. He didn't go off on, like they're making the frogs gay. He stuck to the things that was like, no, there's an out of control agency that's doing that. And now we're living through all of it. But the people that used to scream about it most are the ones who are actually doing it. The people that used to scream about the conspiracy theories about the FEMA camps are the ones now basically acting out word for word the conspiracy theory of the FEMA camps.
Well, I also just find it funny that, like, most of our vaccine, like a lot of our vaccines, came from Nazi scientists during World War II. And now this generation of Nazis would not take those same vaccines.
That was it's funny how things twist around like that, isn't it? Like a ribbon, twisting in the wind.
I've only got like 2 minutes with
Oh, I see.
you left. Because I'm
What was your I
zooming
need to give
into
you a tight
something.
answer to what you had just asked. What had you just asked?
Oh, did you have you picked up any hobbies or interests because of people that you have impersonated?
I mean, I have a whole bunch of artwork, most like half of it's from my comedy shows. So a lot of it is posters. I have posters of myself or variations of myself or the guy, and I'll have like Elon Musk or Orson Welles. I got all these posters and stuff, and people give me things. People give me like a Jesse Ventura toy or a Vincent Price cookbook, one of my prized possessions. And
That's
so
amazing.
people give me things as fans that are from the celebrities that I do impressions of. So that's a nice little perk. I've got my kitchen. My kitchen is actually decorated with I have a Jesse Ventura campaign poster from 1998. I have a
Oh, wow.
Huellhauser publicity photo that I framed. I've got the Vincent Price cookbook. and I have some Bernie stuff. I've got like a bunch of stuff in my kitchen that's like the, from the career. So
Would
that's
you
pretty
say that
fun.
you've learned anything about yourself through who you choose to impersonate?
Yeah,
And I'll do the last one.
I like bombastic figures. I'm attracted to doing bombastic bad guys, but you can't only do bombastic bad guys because
Right.
then you're sucked into that world and it kind of it'll give you bad energy for a few days or weeks. So you have to fill, you have to also play people that you like that are bombastic loudmouths, and someone like Jesse Ventura or Bernie Sanders versus or Orson Welles versus some evil villain who's a bombastic asshole like Elon Musk. Let me see, that's like a way of saying LOL, I'm like the funniest person alive, like great.
Thank you so much for doing this, James. This was a real deep dive treat.
Thank you. I can't wait. I'll be at JFL Toronto coming up in 10 days, depending on when this comes out.